politics without the soap opera, with unfiltered constitutional conservative truth. The Conservative Review with Daniel Horowitz.
And welcome back, fellow American patriots and Minutemen, standing at the ready to fight anew the issues that matter in the way they matter, at the time they matter. That is quite a tall order here at Sierra Podcast, but we are down for the struggle here on this Friday, April 5th, and we'll do a little bit of a free-for-all Friday, kind of touch on any loose ends, anything that comes to my mind first, so it's very unpredictable but enjoyable as always. Please give us a 5-star rating on iTunes if you can, or if you are so willing to do so. And folks, the operative word about fighting the issues that matter, it's not the fighting, it's the issues that matter. Okay? It's the destination, it's not the means, the modality. Okay? The modality could change, whatever is going to get it done. When are we finally going to forge our own path? Stop with the evil of the lesser of the two lessers, or lesser of two evils. Stop with constantly focusing on but the Democrats, but the media, but then having no plan to achieve our own ideas, or worse yet, not even knowing what those objectives are. That's where we are as a movement, as an industry. We don't have our own objective ideas, much less an understanding of how to achieve them. So what do? We simply focus on any given day, jousting with the left. But ironically, when you do that long enough, you joust with them on their territory. So you become so consumed with them and not understanding what is objectively good that you become like them, not just in your demeanor and your ways of fighting, but actually in your objectives. Because, again, you could easily fight them on a talking point or two here or there, but still agree to 90% of their premise. And that is where our movement is. That's where the Republican Party always was. And unfortunately, the dominant forces within MAGA, the Carrie Lakes, the Donald Trumps, led by Bruce Jenner, that's where we are, even with this new revitalized based right, where we're acceding to the other side's premise. You know, this is in Psalms 34:14. We've talked about this before. Turn from evil and do good, seek peace and pursue it. There's no extra word in the Bible. That's our tradition. Every word can be expounded. So you said turn away from evil. Isn't that synonymous with do good? Why does it have to say do good? But the answer is it's not the same. I could constantly be spurning or, you know, dismissing, criticizing elements of evil, but still not be in good territory. So this is how we've reached a point where we could literally have Bruce Jenner as our lead fighter against men and female sports, while normalizing the fact that a well-known male for decades, 6'3", big guy, 220 pounds, could be a Caitlyn, and normalize and champion that behavior on the right, but pick one or two bones with the left within that subject. And if we don't stop this trend and pursue affirmative good, we're going to wind up squandering God-given opportunities that we have, momentum that we have to achieve much greater victories, but have this controlled opposition led by the log cabin Republicans to blunt that sort of momentum we have on an issue that, frankly, naturally, we're winning by a mile. So I want to start off with that, the tranny issue, move on to some other things and how we ultimately pursue good. Our first sponsor today is our friends at Birch Gold. Every time we do this, you know, since the previous time we talked about Birch, Gold set another record, and it's going to continue. The Wall Street Journal has an analysis out that shows that a common basket of supermarket goods is now 37% more expensive than 4 years ago. You look at the CPI, it will only say 21, but it's really 37%, and a lot of items are even more. So the inflation is just, I mean, this is a permanent fixture now with both parties agreeing to increase spending every time, do nothing about it. I'm sure a lot of you are regretting not joining this movement last year, 2 years ago. Well, it's not too late. You have, by the way, until April 15th, if you want to retroactively apply $6,500 tax deduction for yourself and your spouse. That would be if you're married, that's a total of $13,000. If you're above, what is it, 55, I think it's even more, you could contribute to an IRA. Rather than putting in the stock market, put it in gold or convert, roll over an existing IRA into gold. You could take the deduction for this coming year, but I'm saying if you want to do it for last year, you have until tax filing deadline. Text Daniel to 989898 today. Get your free info kit on gold from Birch, and then talk to a precious metal specialist on how to protect your savings from this persistent, intractable inflation we have with gold by texting Daniel again to 989898 today. So, folks, this is where we are with the Bruce Jenners now being the lead people in good standing in Mar-a-Lago leading our movement. This is where we are. It's Jeremiah 7:21. And those of you who aren't familiar with the end of chapter 7, chapter 8, even into chapter 9, it's a very long. It's almost like through Jeremiah, God goes on a rant against his people. And it begins in 7:21 with this prophecy. And I want you guys to look it up. I'm just going to start it off, but you know, I don't want to spend the time reading the whole thing. It really goes on the whole next chapter. So says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, add your burnt offerings upon your sacrifices and eat flesh. For neither did I speak with your forefathers, nor did I command them on the day I brought them out of the land of Egypt concerning a burnt offering or a sacrifice. Now you might say, well, what do you mean I didn't command them? Yes, you did. It's all over Leviticus. That's exactly what he commanded them. Well, let's read on. 23. But this thing did I command them, saying, obey me so that I am your God and you are my people, and you walk in all the ways that I command you so that it may be well with you. But they did not obey, nor did they incline their ear, but walked according to their own counsels and in the view of their evil heart, and they went backwards and not forwards. Since the day your forefathers came forth of the land of Egypt, I sent my servants, goes through the whole history. And in other words, the point is, God did tell us to do certain things, but it's a means to an end. It's a means to an end. This is the sort of movement we have today. We got the icing, but not the cake. We got the harmony, but not the melody. We got the fight, but not really understanding what we're fighting for. We just kind of make a bunch of noise. Oh, we have more conservative fighters, right-wing based, populist, nationalist, whatever you want to call it. People understand what time it is. And yet we're going backwards. And this is why, because we're focused on a talking point, a meme, a strategy as an end to itself, fighting and jousting with the left with a disjointed, you know, day-to-day talking point. And we miss the point. So I want to start out under this thesis with the tranny issue. Because what's very important to understand is because of the left's overreach, and they're so demonic and so destructive, we have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to bring back morals in this country to a degree. This is literally, we're at the moment of Stonewall Jackson after Manassas, where it was David versus Goliath. No one would have understood it. Heck, you even had the high-minded politicians and would take their wives with them from D.C. to fight the Army of Northern Virginia in Virginia, and they thought it would just be a picnic, a fun turkey shoot, and they got routed at Manassas, and they had an emergency retreat. And Stonewall Jackson had the foresight. Unfortunately, he wasn't, you know, they didn't listen to him. he understood that you needed a decapitation shot right away. Otherwise, there was no way they could win a long war with the Union. They didn't have the industry, they didn't have the money, they didn't have the resources. They were never going to win that. He was like, you got to win it now. You can't just be happy with what you got. Give me 10,000 men, I'll take Washington. Scare the bejesus out of them, negotiate, you know, breaking off. Again, I'm not saying that would have been a good thing. I'm not giving an opinion on the Confederacy. I'm using that as an analogy here. This is where we are with the tranny issue. We now, because they're so demonic, you see it in the polling. You see it, you look at polling on the issue, any aspect of this, compare now to 2, 3, 4 years before. We have Pew, we have Gallup. And not only on that, like, for example, I've pointed this out before, we've pushed, but there's actually less support for gay marriage now than it was before. Because, you know, back then it was kind of a fringe thing. Everyone's like, all right, you know, we have a secular society. People don't, you know, most people don't, who aren't biblical, don't see what's wrong with it necessarily. It's that bad. It's not maybe my cup of tea. All right, who cares? But now they're like, oh, okay. Now, even though we're kind of secular, but this is crazy. You know, everything is gay. Everything is destroying marriage. You know, this is not normal. You know, when you have the point where, you know, what is it? We had some polls show 25-30% of some cohorts of young girls think they're bisexual. I mean, there's something really wrong going on here. This is no longer a small movement. Let them just do what they want. This is a big problem. So the public gets that, or enough of them get that. And yet, what Bruce Jenner, not just taking over the Republican Party, but what's regarded at least as the hard right, the Trump Republicans, not the McConnell Republicans. I mean, you guys are probably laughing because it lands in the same place, but you get, you know, perceptions, reality, and politics. No. So what he does is he emphatically pushes himself in front of the crowd, wears a dress, dresses like a freak, calls himself Caitlyn. And he tweets out this week, this is so wrong. It was some sort of story about a man and, you know, a boy and a girl sports. How can we allow this to continue? How can men and women, mothers and fathers, stand idly and allow this to happen to their daughters? We the people are fed up. We cannot vote for people, Dems, that want this insanity to persist. Girls are getting hurt. Okay. So, and it's not just implied and inferred that the only problem with transgenderism is men and female sports. It's he then said blatantly on this thread and many others, he says it all the time, that transgenderism is real and we got to do it, you know, not just saying it. And he literally is the biggest groomer. Again, what is a bigger threat? RuPaul or some sort of, you know, leftist doing that? Or a guy as one of the top spokesmen for Trump and his movement, normalizing that on the right? And, you know, like I said earlier, a couple days ago, we did a show on the war on femininity. We talked about softcore transgenderism that the right and most people that even consider themselves conservatives have acceded to. And I watch this. Nothing embodies the fake right more than this point, where we'll indulge the left. You go, girl. Yeah, yeah. I mean, think about this. Again, I want to make it clear. I am not saying that it's not that you can't be feminine and be involved in any sport, especially if it's not one of these combat sports, or whatever, you know, you do volleyball or running and track, whatever you want to do. I'm not bashing that. But this is the point I'm making. If you're Bruce Jenner calling yourself Caitlyn, or people that are allied with him, even if they don't kind of do that behavior themselves, and you have zero problem with the masculinization of women, even outside the official transgender line, but certainly the bathrooms and the notion that we could have on conservative media, a guy notoriously known as a male athlete, Bruce, for years, calling himself Caitlyn and dressing like a freak and stealing the femininity of women, stealing the beauty of women, stealing the identity of women. That is okay. Is a significant part of the conservative movement. That is all okay. You know, a lot of these conservative influencers will retweet him and, you know, praise him for doing this. But oh my gosh, the one time they have a problem is get the men out of the pool. Get the men out of the pool. That's a problem. That's even worse than not caring about the issue at all. Don't get me wrong. I was part of the very first legislation. I helped my friend Barbara Ehart. She's an Idaho rep. She had the first bill, was in Idaho, to ban men in female sports. And then Rhonda Milstead in South Dakota. The two of them are friends. And that was the bill that Kristi Noem opposed. But that was... Stop being an idiot and focusing on the finger of the guy pointing to the moon or the icing rather than the cake, the harmony over the melody. It's a talking point of one of the absurd things of transgenderism to broadly exterminate that demonic evil from our society. But if you go and you praise the notion that transgenderism is real and a man could be a woman and you even have them as conservative celebrities and then... You know, and then he supports men in female bathrooms. Oh, but it's just the sports. That actually reveals that your whole thing is, don't mess with the she-jocks. Don't mess with the she-jocks. That's pathetic. That actually is born out of this. And let me put a finer point on this. Let me ask you something. What harms the antecedent of male-female relationships, of preserving masculinity for men, femininity for women, and cultivating and harnessing the beauty of both traits in their proper time? What is a bigger kill shot on that? And as we noted a couple days ago, a kill shot on that is a kill shot in all civilization. What's a worse manifestation of that? Having men kind of make a mockery out of female sports and, you know, just unfairness? Or drafting women as if they're men? What's worse? Okay, let's be real. Now, you might say, well, I think they're both absurd, but yeah, I agree with you, Daniel. This is, you know, obviously, I mean, the notion that you're going to denude women of their right to be protected and just act feminine and not have to, you know, look, there's one thing you want to go in of your own volition. I'm a boss girl. I'm going to do this. Look, I mean, it's not my cup of tea. It's not the cup of tea of the women in my family. Personally, you know, I'm more of a fan of kind of the sort of place we landed with women in the military circa maybe the first Gulf War, but not what we expanded beyond that into the 90s and certainly the 2000s. But okay, whatevs, fine. I mean, there's been painstaking studies that have been done by the Marines. It destroys women's bodies. God did not design that. They don't get their periods. I mean, but you want to run yourself into the ground, fine. But you make it that you cannot have the option that men and women are so the same that you're going to have a universal draft. Every year, Chip Roy has to fight this in the NDAA, and he tells me, even the Republicans that, like, okay, they won't vote with the left on this, but they don't have their hair on fire over it. They're not that bothered by it, but they're bothered by men and female sports. I'm just telling you, if you're not bothered by the former, you're not bothered by Bruce Jenner, you're not bothered by them, you know, stealing the broad identity of women, both in the transgender du jour manifestation, but also in the softcore tranny manifestation. But then the only thing you care about is men and female sports that actually is coming from a bad place, not a good place. Because it's like, you know what I'm saying? You don't want to undermine the more sort of like masculine energy of women, not the feminine energy. Again, not that there's anything wrong with you know, having hobbies and, you know, sports and, you know, daughters joining leagues of whatever sports. I'm not saying that's a problem. The problem is when that is elevated to such a stature that that's the only and the primary concern of men stealing the identity of women and just erasing and exterminating the beauty of femininity from humanity and from women. I don't know why this is not a simple point that others don't make. But anyway, the punchline here is Bruce Jenner is designed by the system as a perfect controlled opposition. A controlled opposition is, here's why you need a controlled opposition. I said this many times, if you only had one political party doing bad things, because what they're doing is so demonic, harmful, destructive, people would rebel. So what you do is, you know, you go really far to the left. Now what happens? Naturally, there's going to be a pendulum swing against you. You blunt the blowback by appointing the leaders leading that pendulum swing back to say, okay, it only goes this far. So what you do is, while you fight the sports issue, what you do is implicitly and really explicitly, it's okay for a Bruce to be a Caitlyn. It's okay to have men in female bathrooms. It's okay to just in general in society treat women exactly the same as men in all aspects. You know, just out of the pool. That's what it's done, because right now we could crush them on this issue. Again, to be careful, Bruce's job is not to fight men in female sports, because we're already winning on that. His job is to ensure it goes no further than that point. And you could copy and paste this to many other issues as well, but we see it very vividly there, because I think everyone sees that naturally we have a ton of momentum on that issue, and he's blunting it. The main point on the tranny issue is this. Women are not smaller, less hairy versions of men. Okay? That's what society is pushing. Whether, again, they officially say you could convert over, or even if they don't officially go the tranny route, but I've noted this, you know, many times, that our entire culture is built upon just erasing the differences between the sexes, and it's more towards putting women on par with men rather than the other way around. You know, there's some ways, obviously making more girly men in many contexts, but I think it's even more of a problem the other way, and it's less discussed on the right. But, I mean, this is the problem we have. Nothing about MAGA screams family values at a time when we're facing potentially the popping of the cultural Marxist asset bubble. You know, just like an asset bubble, you know, like housing, it goes up and pops. We're now at a point of cultural Marxism being an asset bubble that's ready to pop. Okay? And, you know, look, I'm not bothered by these single women living in yuppie urban areas, going to graduate school until they're 32 and never marrying, you know, voting Democrat. I'm not bothered by that. It is what it is. But what I am bothered by is there are way too many married suburban women that continue to vote Democrat that shouldn't be voting Democrat. And a big part of that, and we know them in our lives, they might be brainwashed. I'm not talking about the ones that are completely brainwashed and on par with the single ones, but the ones that are somewhere in the middle. You know, that might have bought into gay marriage, bought into a lot of the social liberalism, but now they're like, whoa, okay, this is a bit much. And especially, you know, the school issues, what they're doing, the school boards were winning on that. If you had a sincere movement of Freedom Caucus types, of DeSantis types, that kind of live it. You know, maybe the voters, these people aren't quite where they are, but they're like, you know, I'm going to go with you over Biden. But when you have a movement built upon this sort of rot gut, meaning either it's the gay log cabins, the Carrie Lake, Bruce Jenner, Rick Grinnell types, or it's the more red pill types, but they're more like the Andrew Tate's, like, genuinely misogynist, just hate on women, treat them like chattel, the concubine culture, the constant cheating with porn stars. Again, let's not forget that. You know, we're so busy defending Trump on the charges, which of course are trumped up and bogus, but let's not forget, I mean, he has had a playboy life. That does matter at some point. If you want to win on these issues, it's a little bit hard to tell suburban women, like, hey, you know, these guys just exude family value. That's not a movement they're going to want to join. Doesn't take a genius to figure that out. And this is why we latch on to any leftist who remotely agrees with us on one little narrative, like a Kanye West or a Kid Rock or this and that. I mean, again, the left is so absurd on so many things. You'll find some sort of narrative of one issue that you'll get a traditional leftist to come out and say, oh, that, you know, the modern day leftists are taking it too far. And it's fine. You could have them adjacent on that issue. But you bring them into your tent. You don't go over to them. And they're now your leaders. So now you're run by this. This was the problem with Carrie Lake. She was a lifelong Democrat, voted for Obama. That's fine. You want to convert people over like that. And some of them eventually make a full conversion like Reagan. But again, it's a little bit different when you were a Democrat in the, you know, in the 1940s versus being a Democrat in the, you know, in the 2000s. But, you know, some people genuinely do change, and that's fine. But we throw ourselves at these people, and, you know, you don't have to have perfection on every issue, but there's a lot of big, meaningful issues they just have no moral compass on. You could have them in the back of the bus. You can't have them driving the bus. We don't have affirmative good. Psalms 34:14. We're just so focused on just get a talking point. We need our conservative tranny. We need our temporary talking point that subverts our broader goal because we don't really have a goal. That's not what God wants from you. And just to cap off this point before we get to our special guest and what it looks like, because again, I criticize what I don't like dominating MAGA and the right, but then side by side, I give the solution. We'll get to that. But look, there's one piece of news I'd be remiss if I didn't say. Melania Trump has been missing for a long time. Okay, you don't really see her with Trump much. I'm not even getting involved in the personal thing. And I don't, you know, everyone loves Melania. I have nothing against her. And this is certainly not, you know, it's not about her. It's not the point. But she hasn't really done much. She's been out of the public eye. There's news now. She's holding a big fundraising event, kind of her first foray back into politics, on April 20th. Now, you know, what sort of, is it some sort of like fundraising for veterans, for Freedom Caucus candidates? No, it's a fundraiser for the Log Cabin Republicans. Now, the log cabins were big during the Bush years, and eventually they just lost all power. No one wanted gay republic. What does that even mean? I didn't even know they were still around. In fact, you had a new organization that took over called Go Proud was the new one. So I didn't even know log cabins existed. The log cabins were rejuvenated by Trump and his sort of, you know, some of his top influencers. This is a big problem. What do you think the job of the log cabins is? Well, Daniel, you know, they just happen to be gay. As if that's immutable. Like we've learned. You know, really? Yeah, all this fad, you know, now 30% of Gen Z is gay. Like, really? That's natural? I am gay, as if, like, I am, you know, Caucasian or black. So, like, I have green eyes. I have red hair. That's an immutable. Really? I mean, so immutably, in one generation, it grows like 1,000%? No, it's bullcrap. It's a behavior. People have different, you know, inclinations, proclivities for different things here and there, but it's fundamentally a behavior. But anyway, why do you think they're there? Because we need another organization fighting for lower taxes, limited government, strong defense, you know, that just happens to be gay? No, it's a subversive. It's the gay part. Because they want to normalize it, so they'll pick a bone with some of the real extreme, absurd outcomes of some of the left's rainbow jihad, but fundamentally to preserve it. You can't get a greater controlled opposition than the log cabin Republicans that is particularly destructive in blunting the momentum we already have. And this is how they held a big gala celebration in Mar-a-Lago, the end of 2022, celebrating Biden signing the bill mandating gay marriage in the red states. You know, with Bruce there, Carrie Lake there. This is a big problem. I don't understand how you have this whole like red pilled movement that claims to be, yeah, you know, we're sick of this, you know, homosexual stuff. A lot of these online influencers, I don't understand. If you're worried about the homosexual agenda, where is it most destructive? And where could you have the most influence to stop it? The answer to both of those are on the Trump right. It's the most destructive because, you know, on the left, it's already as popular as can be. You can't jazz it up more than it is. On the right, naturally, people are moving away from it, those that even got towards it to begin with, and you're rejuvenating it. And B, that's where you have the most influence. Call it out. Just like we talked about with Ukraine. But nothing. Nothing. We're so busy shadowboxing the left on their own territory over their own issues rather than our issues. That's why we can't move the ball forward on things like immigration, vaccines, even when we have tons of evidence and material to work with to convince and change hearts and minds, because we're not getting anywhere because we have a controlled opposition. So that's a diagnosis of where we are now. I could go on and on about that. That is the raw truth. Bookmark this half an hour. This is where we are. But I want to get to our guest on where we should be headed. Our interview is sponsored by our friends at fastgrowingtrees.com. You know, at some point, I'm going to have to move out of my house. My wife is just filling up every square inch with fast-growing trees. They have outdoor and indoor trees that are fast-growing, hardy, come with a 30-day Thrive and Alive guarantee. They're delivered, by the way, they're delivered really quickly. Every single shipment we have had has come within a few days. So, you know, if you're in a rush now, which you should be, because April is the time to plant. We got a bunch of rain here in the east. Head over to get 15% off by using promo code conservative when you go to fastgrowingtrees.com today. Again, they have shade, they have privacy trees, they have beautification trees. We have both indoor and outdoor. So indoor, you could have, we have lime, mango, lemon now. My wife has gotten a couple more too. I don't even know what they are. She's been using the promo code. So even if you're in a northern climate where you can't grow some of this stuff, you could actually grow it in your house, especially when you have these indoor lights. They're kind of annoying, but if you put them a little bit off to the side, they really do work. So again, for 15% off today, they have discounts to begin with without the promo code because it's spring, but our listeners get an additional 15% off by going to fastgrowingtrees.com. Offer code conservative at checkout. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. So make sure you jump on that today. So what is it we should affirmatively pursue? Okay, what is our sort of, you know, our example of not just avoid evil, but do affirmative good like it says in Psalms? And to me, there is no greater example of this than the South Carolina Freedom Caucus. Okay, we've highlighted DeSantis a lot in Florida at a governor's level, where we see the most vivid illustration of identifying a problem, identifying an objective, and pursuing it as much as possible, and also achieving electoral success. At a legislative level, the only movement we have that's not just bellyaching about the left or about our predicament, which is horrible, but actually trying to build a bench of people and ideas and then merge the two to pursue affirmative good. And not just that we need to be doing this, but also at a political level, how we could then sort of lose this tail we have, this dead weight of a controlled opposition that will take some of our broad rhetoric and disquiet against the Democrats, jujitsu it into a black hole. And then we're all Tea Party, we're all MAGA, we're all Republicans, we're all conservatives, we're all right-leaning, center-right, but then we're not, and it just gets subverted. And the South Carolina Freedom Caucus is probably the farthest along of all the Freedom Caucuses, which have done a great job, that I have seen. We've highlighted it throughout the last year a lot, where both at the legislative level, they're exposing this schism that whether you like it or not, it's as wide as Mars. It's from here to Mars. So you may as well stop covering it up so we can address it. Forcing votes, having an organized, almost a party within a party, a distinguished, almost as if it's the Freedom Party, Freedom Caucus, Uniparty. That is the only way we eschew and rid ourselves of this Bruce Jenner Republicanism and this log cabin Republicans, how we could have top Republicans fundraising for something that is not just something we don't believe, but is designed to subvert and blunt our momentum. So to have these ideas, have this distinguished jersey, and then not only that, build a bench to grow the numbers as a separate, distinct, de facto party, and then also showing that they're running for higher office. You know, we have that. We have two of the Freedom Caucus members running for Congress in South Carolina, and I could just tell you, we are going to have candidates against Lindsey Graham, and we're going to have one for governor in South Carolina in 2 years from now. So, look, you know, rather than doubling down on failure, why don't we learn about what success looks like? So I figured, you know, I'd make a call to the executive director of the South Carolina Freedom Caucus, and it's our next guest, Evan Newman. He is the director of the South Carolina chapter of the Freedom Caucus. He previously served as the executive director for the South Carolina Club for Growth. He also worked on various local campaigns, including, by the way, John Warren for governor in 2018. That guy should have won and would have been 100 times better than McMaster's, but a certain individual came in and endorsed McMaster, so, you know, it wasn't to be. But anyway, I want you guys to go to statefreedomcaucus.org. You could follow him at Evan Newman, E-V-A-N Newman, N-E-W-M-A-N _SC on Twitter. And then definitely make sure you follow the Twitter tag at SC Freedom Caucus. You look at their media apparatus there, and it is literally the model for what a Freedom Caucus should look like, totally treating the mainstay Republican Party as if they're Democrats, because they are. That's how it's done. And of course, Evan is with us in person. Hey, Evan, thanks so much for joining me. We've been trying to get you on for a long time. Great to have you.
Hey, Daniel. Thanks for having me. Thanks for all you do. And I'm happy to finally be on.
No, absolutely. So look, you've heard me say my piece. I want to really get from you practically, because we have our Constitution Action teams that we've divided our audience up to. By the way, folks, you can go to conaction.network. We now have teams in most of the red states, the majority of the red states. At an activism level, how is this done? I just want to preface by saying I see a lot of infighting at the national, you know, the Congressional Freedom Caucus, lots of different personalities, a lack of cohesion, a lack of strategic planning. You guys seem to be unified. You have your goals. You have your votes. How did you get this done?
Well, it's no easy task, but we've been blessed here. You know, one thing that we set out to do when we first started the South Carolina Freedom Caucus was to place an emphasis on quality over quantity. You know, we all know that in any political institution, it's a numbers game at any point, and especially in a place like South Carolina, where we have a supermajority. We have 88 Republicans, 36 Democrats. But when we started, we wanted to place an emphasis on quality conservative legislators who we knew would actually deliver on the promises they made to their constituents. And we always say, it's not enough just to vote the right way. You have to actively be fighting. Voting the right way is the bare minimum. That's the lowest expectation that you can meet for your constituents. But you have to do more than that. You have to, you know, publicly do what your part to move Overton windows in the conservative movement. So I would say a lot of the cohesion came because we were so prudent and judicious in who we really wanted to start the caucus and who we then, you know, down the road after elections chose to invite. I'd say the other big thing, though, and this is really,
Wait, Evan, just you're throwing out amazing information. Before you get to factor two, just to summarize factor one, because this is really important. You know, if you're looking to start one in your state, and this is what we talk about, big tents. You want to grow your tent, but you got to start with a core. And this is how they subverted. This is how we got Kristi Noem's Tea Party, Renee Elmer's Tea Party. Remember that? Everyone's Tea Party. Everyone's MAGA. Everyone's everything, but they're not. And you have to, you have to look beyond the cheap talking points. When you have a Democrat in the White House, and you're in a red state, every Republican running is like, oh, Biden sucks. We're for small government. I mean, they're all going to say that. But you have to demonstrate in a way. What are the sort of things that would that allow you to vet that out?
So, you know, one thing that we really are intentional about is we place an emphasis on in the candidate recruitment process, getting to intimately know the candidates we're talking to, asking them more than just the baseline survey questions you can ask anybody. I mean, we want to know about their family, about what really, you know, drives them. And, you know, anyone can deliver a line about, oh, I want to go serve my state or whatever it may be. I want to know, you know, for instance, we have a lady out in Anderson County. She's one of our best members, April Cromer, who she never wanted to be in politics. In fact, she hates being called a politician, which is one of my favorite things about her. She ran almost reluctantly, or not almost, completely reluctantly, because of a reason. And that reason was because of the COVID overreach that, you know, caused her business to have to effectively shut down and the other businesses in her community to shut down. So when you're going through and vetting these candidates, I think it's really, really important to be extremely intentional and not just having that one time touch or that two time touch. And you hang up and you say, okay, well, they said all the right things. I think they're good. We had so many people in 2022 campaign as Freedom Caucus members. And then when they got down to Columbia, they immediately fell in line with leadership for whatever shiny object leadership was throwing them, whether it was freshman chair, which is largely, you know, unnecessary and doesn't really do anything, or it was some committee position. It's very important from the outset to get beyond just the talking points and to get to know the person and to completely vet them out and watch them over a long period of time. And that can be difficult at times because, you know, we're running like crazy trying to recruit people. You don't always have the luxury of having someone, you know, a year out from an election knowing this person's going to run. So let me spend a lot of time with them to figure out what makes them beat. But the more you can do that, I think the better opportunity you have to ensure that these people are definitely of your kind.
Now, how do you deal with... How do you cut through the rhetoric now? So you know, we'll have a lot of guys that come from very deep red districts. So, you know, the incentives are to say what the base wants to hear, but they're just kind of like, well, this mindless populism, if you know what I mean, this mindless reactionaryism. Sure. Again, it's very easy. You know, we talked about before you came on Psalms 34:14, turn from evil, but and do good and pursue it. They're not necessarily synonymous. Right. It's very easy to like, yeah, I mean, this is whacked out. The Democrats are crazy. But ultimately, what I'm finding is a lot of these guys don't know what they don't know and they don't have a core. How do you vet that out?
So the way that the South Carolina Freedom Caucus has done it, in a little bit of back context for listeners, any coalition of true conservatives in any political institution is going to be largely shafted by leadership. They're going to be put on the worst committees. They're going to be put in the corner. And effectively, what leadership will try to do is to neuter them of any sort of legislative power to move their bills or their policy agenda items. So what the South Carolina Freedom Caucus members do is instead of worrying about the committee process, which is largely scripted already by the Speaker of the House in any given state or in D.C., what they do is they take the fights to the floor for the public to see. So, you know, we get a bill that comes up that has to do with election integrity or something to do with primaries. Well, we're going to put a closed primary amendment up and we're going to get a roll call vote. And let's see if the promise you made to your constituents back when you were campaigning, you know, 1 or 2 years ago, about how you support closed primaries. Let's see if you actually believe it. So it's a combination of confrontation that leads to exposure. I think that's the best way to really cut through the rhetoric and see who is really who they're saying they are.
In other words, you point and shoot. You don't just go to the gun range and enjoy the ambience and, you know, yeah, I love my 2A, and you know, you hang out and check out each other's guns and get the old men out there you know, just doing more talking and less shooting. I'm just kind of giving a metaphor with that. No, like, there's the target. Here it is. So one of two things happens. Either you get what you want and they're like, oh, yeah, we'll do it. Or now they're tagged and we don't go on in perpetuity having, you know, like your Lindsey Grahams for 4 consecutive terms where he continues to screw us but somehow continues getting reelected, where at some point they're going to be tagged. But before we get to the primaries, I want you to just give some examples. You're not just exposing, which is important because it will lead to building our numbers, which we couldn't do without, you know, these floor fights where, you know, you're constantly losing, what is it? You got 86 88 Republicans. And so a lot of these votes, you're only getting 20 or so votes in support. But there are some things that you actually did get passed by shaming them, forcing a convert or die moment where they chose to convert.
Absolutely. I mean, this year alone, I would say this has been the most conservative session we've had in my memory. And what's really funny about it is all of last year, you know, we took the format that I just laid out, you know, get to the floor, offer amendments, force tough votes, and then get to the election year. And a lot of these people start acting differently because they know they might be up for re-election or have a challenger. And so this year alone, I mean, a couple great examples. We had a bill this year, a pediatric transgender ban. And if you recall, if the listeners have heard before, in 2022, actually, the South Carolina Freedom Caucus caught wind that there was a taxpayer-funded pediatric transgender clinic connected to the MUSC in Charleston. And so our members, you know, went to various elected officials, higher ups, and said, hey, what are we going to do about this? Everyone pretty much said, hey, go sit down, be quiet, don't talk about that. So what the Freedom Caucus members did was they FOIA'd the clinic and asked them, you know, what prescriptions are you giving to these kids? What procedures? How young are they? How many are you affecting? And then we openly told them, you know, we're going to expose this to the media. Well, the next day the clinic shut down. And so we then use this as sort of source material to bring back to the chamber and say, this is happening. It's happening on taxpayer dime as well. We need a bill immediately to stop this. And so what happened? Well, we finally got a bill to move this year, the Help Not Harm Act. Well, when the bill came to the floor, it originally, and this goes back to kind of some of our tactics before, it didn't have criminal penalties for doctors who, if they knowingly broke the law and did these procedures, they would get off scot-free largely. So Freedom Caucus members offered amendment after amendment to rectify that. And they kept getting shot down by Republicans and Democrats until it was flagged for Riley Gaines. And Riley Gaines fired off a tweet, and within seconds, we got an amendment passed that was probably one of the strongest criminal conviction penalties for these doctors in the whole country. And so, but it wouldn't have happened if that initial fight had not started, and then we leveraged the pressure that we built during an election year to get movement. Another good example I'll give really quickly is DEI. So in 2023, the budget comes up. We attempted to slash and prohibit all mandatory DEI, training and hiring stuff, and to cut it from specifically our state-funded universities, because it's not a core function of government. And so we lost all those battles last year, but we had like 150 amendments put up to deal with this in some way, shape, or form. Well, what happens? We wore them down, and they came to us and they said, if you pull the amendments, we'll get you a bill next year. What happened? Literally 2 weeks ago, we passed a bill that would ban DEI in public institutions in South Carolina. That doesn't happen if you don't fight first and offer exposure to constituents and to voters, and then use that leverage to get what you want. We only have 17. They can stop us. They can stop what they want. They can advance what they want at any given point because they have the numbers. But we have the exposure and the constituents and the grassroots on our side, which is what we leverage to win these battles.
And again, you can't just leverage them in the abstract, but you take a news cycle. Oh, this is a problem. A lot of people talk about this in Florida. You know, the new trend of squatting. Okay, big problem. So typically we'll talk about a problem for 10 years. Well, DeSantis was like, well, yeah, it's a problem. So let's make sure we have the local or the state laws oriented in a way that through local law enforcement, you get it done, they're out, done. And he did it. And now Adam Morgan, your chairman, has a similar bill he just introduced in your state.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, he filed that, I believe. We were on furlough this week, so he filed that at the end of last week. But yeah, you're absolutely right. It can't be done in the abstract. And that's why, you know, the biggest thing I always go back to when I'm talking to any, I talk to a lot of other states where there's current members and their chambers who want to start a Freedom Caucus. They ask for my advice on kind of stuff we're talking about. And it all starts with fighting. Like if you don't go out there and go to the well and speak your truth about an issue for your constituents, then there's no distinctions created. Politics is all about distinctions. And if you can't create distinctions for the voters across the state to show them, this is why you need to vote this guy out, or you need to call them and put enough pressure so that they actually start representing your values, you're never going to win.
No, I mean, this is the thing. You got to shake the tree. The problem is, too often, we knew forever these people were awful, but you speak to the average normie Republican voter, they don't know, well, he's not a Democrat. I mean, they don't know much about him, and
right.
You don't pick those fights. So this is my question. You know, we do have people, we have legislators listening, we have people who want to run for state legislature. Obviously, the rules do change by constitution of the state, chamber rules, but generally speaking, what are the tools that members have? Because often, you know, I'll call a member and it'll be like, look, Daniel, I'll introduce your bill for you. That's great, but they're not going to hear it in committee. It's dead on arrival. What are the sort of tactics that they have to force floor votes?
Yeah, so I mean, in the South Carolina House rules, there's a couple different ways you can use the motion period to pull a bill out of committee, which is rarely done. It's an incredibly old institutional norm that you don't do that because it's effectively seen as a slap in the face to the speaker or the respective committee chair. That's one of the really only ways in South Carolina where you can pull something out of committee that way. The biggest thing that we've experienced success on that I would and it's kind of conventional wisdom, but it really does work if you put the work in. You have to build out a grassroots army, because if you can build out a grassroots army targeting some of these squishy districts, you know, if they know that you have 10 lieutenants in a district where there's a guy who's a squish and nervous about reelection, you can start getting things moving really quickly, because at the end of the day, in our instance, the House Republican Caucus, or the House Rhino Caucus, as I call it, they care about getting all of their people back as much as they care about taking out our own people. So if I can make it a real threat to them that their person might go home because I have people in their district who are calling about a specific bill that needs movement, what do you think that respective incumbent is going to do? He's going to go to the speaker, or she's going to go to the speaker and start complaining and saying, hey, we need to move this or else I might not come back. And that it's almost a little bit of guerrilla tactics. It's not as much procedurally. Like I said, that's really the only rule we have that we can use at our disposal, which is the motion period. But there's a couple other things that, you know, you can do from a committee standpoint, but typically they're shot down because, again, you don't have the number. Like I said, what we've experienced success with on moving legislation is getting the grassroots incensed about specific bills and targeting districts with our own sort of, like I said, I use the term lieutenant, who is the civilian extension of the Freedom Caucus, who then can kind of go and not lobby, but advocate on behalf of the rest of their district that they are as a grassroots leader representing.
And these are our con action teams we're building. We have a terrific team in South Carolina, and you'd be shocked, like I told you guys, at what you could accomplish. Calls to Congress, they get a lot. I mean, but individual state legislators, especially when you do it from the right in a district where there's a credible primary threat, it's a different story, and we're starting to see that. And that leads me to my final point here, which is, yeah, obviously you need the deterrent. They need to feel, you know, right now, generally speaking, at a federal level, we just don't turn out incumbents. We just don't. We have not done so a single time so far this year. At this point, hopefully, you know, Adam will be one of the first, but it generally doesn't happen, so they don't really feel that deterrent. We got to build that in the states, and like I told you guys, most states do not have their legislative elections. Like I'm sick of hearing the primaries are over. Most of them have not begun yet. These are our most important primaries of our lifetime, and there is so much that could be done. Nowhere is this more apparent than the June primary in South Carolina. Give us a little sense, Evan, of the landscape of defense, offense. You have 17 existing members. They're being targeted, but you want to try to grow it out of the 88 Republicans you have. Where do things stand on that front?
Yeah, absolutely. So right now we're looking at around 36 to 38 candidates statewide. It's been called, from people I've talked to, the largest collection of conservative challengers at one time, which I think is probably accurate. You know, in 2022, our last primary cycle, I think we had somewhere around 15 challengers or candidates. And nine of them won, and the other six lost by like fewer than 200 votes and had a ton of money spent against them. You know, the crosshairs is on our members. And so it's really important to recruit competent, conservative, courageous candidates across the state for a couple of reasons. First of all, we have to grow the ranks. Second of all, we have to divert resources away from our current members and really spread them thin from their own spending capabilities. If we can do that, it helps everyone out, including the challenger and the incumbents. And so the way I view it, you know, we only have 17 members to protect. They have 88 minus 17, whatever that math shakes out to be. So their job's a lot harder than mine is. And, you know, I really just starting even as early as last year, this time, I started traveling the state, being very intentional about going to grassroots meetings, building up a grassroots conservative base of supporters and grasstop leaders, and just being super intentional about telling them, hey, I need people on the ballot. I can't do anything from from growing the ranks perspective unless we get names on the ballot. And so it really is just a lot of grunt work to get those numbers. But as far as the landscape right now, I mean, it's looking better than it's ever looked before. I think that with people like Stuart Jones and Adam Morgan on the tickets for those two different congressional districts, I think that drives turnout for the conservative base up a lot in these districts, which will help. And I really think that they're, you know, the way I've been describing it is I think there's going to be a reckoning day for all of the people who have for years now lied to their constituents, manipulated their constituents. There's going to be a reckoning day. And June 12th, I think, is going to look really good for the Freedom Caucus movement in South Carolina.
So if my math is correct, I mean, if you guys were successful, you could theoretically, now, I mean, there's no historical precedent for running the table in primaries, but you could theoretically get a majority among Republicans.
Yeah, that's right. And there's some Senate candidates. So we're hoping to move to become bicameral.
Oh, wow.
The majority of them are on the House side.
Because right now, Republicans, again, it's what is it, 30 to 15, 30 Republicans, 15 Democrats.
Yep.
Out of the 30 Republicans, you probably only have a few.
Sure. Yeah, there's a few that I think that if we got, you know, seven true and through Freedom Caucus members into the Senate, I think there's about four that would come join, which would be huge. It would be absolutely massive. But there are a couple good conservatives over there on that side of the chamber. It operates a lot differently, but we want to get over there. And certainly, we're really close in my mind, and I think we can achieve it in the House, to getting that margin, that number, to where we can start stopping stuff and advancing stuff at will. And I know that terrifies the establishment. I'll tell you and the listeners, I heard through the grapevine a while back, the Speaker of the House in South Carolina, Merle Smith, said, if the Freedom Caucus grows, I will probably not be the Speaker anymore. And he's right. not that they're going to come in there and immediately oust him, but what he knows is, rather, I'm going to have to get in line and work with them and start passing conservative legislation, which is not, you know, necessarily beneficial to his donors, or I'm going to be ousted.
I mean, there are so many lessons to glean from this, Evan. I mean, this is beautiful. This is music to my ears. Again, everyone likes to say, you know, Trump exposed the deep state of the left. But I think DeSantis and the South Carolina Freedom Caucus have exposed the deep state of the right. And what I mean by that is that all these years that we just tolerated this and allowed this to go on, it was a fraud. It didn't have to be this way. And we just allowed it to go on. You're showing how, you know, how easy it is to expose it. It's hard that, you know, it took the grunt work to build this. But now that you launched the satellite into orbit, now you have the jerseys are so distinct. It's hard to have fakers anymore, because, you know, if you're going to join this, you're totally cut off from the conference, which is good. And then I would also add, there are adjacent people, meaning, you know, like we talked about, you don't want to start your core with people that aren't committed, that aren't scared of shooting hostages.
Absolutely.
That, you know, or are too scared to shoot hostages. But once you're at the point where you guys are, you got 17 members, let's say you're able to pick off a few dozen of their guys, whoa, that's a different story. I'm sure there's a number of others in the middle that, you know, look, they'll go anywhere. They're just not going to buck leadership. But if you guys are the strongest gravitational force, you know, that's a different story.
100%. I mean, we have some good allies in the House, not many of them. Funny enough, somebody the other day asked me about, you know, is there what 10 non-Freedom Caucus members would you say to endorse? And I said, I don't know that I can count 10. but you're exactly right. There's a lot of people who finger in the wind sort of thing. I really believe that they're conservative in their core. Some of them are, you know, my friends still.
Sure.
I believe they're conservative in their core, but they're just not. They're not willing quite yet to
do what it takes to get there. And this is,
yes,
by the way, I have this all the time. I've jousted with people at a federal level. We'll often have a state legislator who's not a Freedom Caucus guy, either they don't have one or whatever, run for Congress. Like, well, Danny, this guy's not a rhino. And I say, he's not a Republican in name only, fundamentally agrees with most of what we're saying. But right now, we're inexorably headed towards a certain landing place. If you don't actively tilt it away and do very specific things to do that, it's worthless. The guy might be a decent guy. If we reoriented and did that tilt and went in our better direction, they'll be on the ship. They'll join it. But if you, they won't be a part of the people turning that. So I think that's your second order. Once we get critical mass, it's not going to get us the critical mass. I must say, Evan, what I am impressed with you guys is that, and this really shows the difference between like a real movement that builds a Boy Scout fire campfire rather than just taking a couple of twigs and, you know, dumping lighter fluid on it to get that, you know, 1 second, right, you know, burst is, and I'm not trying to criticize this, but like the most successful thing we have to date is Texas with the legislature. But again, that was, let's face it, it was built off of impeachment of Ken Paxton. And everyone, right, understands that. And look, I'll take it any way it comes. You guys don't have any one real, like, man, the Republicans just totally voted for something insane or did something that everyone could understand. It's an amalgamation of just a bunch of issues. You know, typically it's not enough to get voters to turn on incumbents. And the fact that you've gotten this far demonstrates that you now have reached a point. You have a new party, new name ID, de facto new party. We're not going to win by having the old, like, Republican study committee in Congress sort of thing where, yeah, we put out our budget, it's cute, our papers, but ultimately leadership knows we're there for them. At the end of the day, they're not there for us. And they've declared war on us. They're not going to support us. We got to return the favor if we're ever going to get anywhere. Give you the final thought before we sew up.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I think too, you know, another couple things that we did to kind of to build that is, first of all, it's death by a thousand cuts. You know, there were certainly, in my opinion, and probably yours, but maybe not in the general public's, there was some pretty egregious stuff that's gone through $1.4 billion to a foreign company that produces electric off-road vehicles. And there's other stuff down the line, but it was death by a thousand cuts. And where we were so intentional was every single one of those cuts was not going to be internally talked about. It was going to be externally promoted. So we were going to tell grassroots every single one of those cuts, every single bad bill that came through, we were going to be sure to tell them about, to the point that there was a reflexive tendency that if they almost saw an email from us, it was rarely going to be good. And, you know, that sounds so negative, but it's necessary. Because
it's necessary.
You have to continually remind people that it's not good. It's not a one-off instance and your rep's good otherwise. These are people who are getting 30s and 40s and 50s from Club for Growth and CPAC and all these different, you know, nationally known conservative scorecards. They are not what they're telling you to be. The other thing that we did too, which I would, and again, this takes a lot of work, but our members just threw themselves into it. We did a statewide tour last year. I mean, that's how we built the brand so quickly, is we probably spoke to over 100 groups in probably 30 of the 46 counties. And I mean, thousands of people. We did rallies that had 450, you know, 500 people show up. And we boldly projected a conservative vision that was completely disparate with what the House Republican Rhino copy and paste caucus projected. Why? Because they don't really project anything. So by default, we were already one step above them because we were actually telling constituents what we wanted to do. And we had a vision. And they loved it. That's what people want, is they do want fighters, despite this old school sort of Bush era consulting messaging that comes from most of the establishment. The people actually do want fighters.
No, they do. And obviously, we got to do it in a smart way that's oriented towards objectives. I'm not just kind of belly aching and then, I'm sick of the Bush Republicans. Oh, let me go to a fundraiser at, Log Cabin Republicans, where we're just kind of mindless. But really, like, you know, people like Adam Morgan that are oriented towards outcomes, smart on the issues, know what they believe, and are willing to do what it takes. I mean, look, I wish we could blast this half an hour to everyone. All these people are like, Daniel, I don't know what to do. It's like, you know, you come out like the groundhog, you know, every other 2 years on the first Tuesday in November with your presidential general election or the general, like, congressional midterms. No, I mean, if you're in a red state, all those action items, everything you express, we would have a different country if we did this times 20 and then do it a couple consecutive cycles. My gosh, I mean, even if you lose nationally, the amount of things you can do to protect yourselves from the values issues, from the green energy, you know, the green dystopia, all this stuff. But if you don't do it, you know, South Carolina, Georgia, these states are becoming a mecca for the green dystopia.
Absolutely.
Under Republicans. And that's the problem. You can't just say, well, you know, we don't want to rip the Band-Aid off. They're still kind of Republicans. It's worthless. So again, folks, I want you to follow at Evan Newman _SC, at SC Freedom Caucus, on Twitter. It's a very important follow, not just the information, but just to see the messaging. Copy and paste this. Go to conaction.network in your state to join. We'll hook you up with one of your team leaders. And if there's a Freedom Caucus in that state, we work with the Freedom Caucus. Evan, we're going to have you back many, many times. We love this partnership. Thank you for joining us. And thank you all. God bless you all. Have a terrific, terrific weekend.